Welcome to the LarryInFishers.com podcast. I'm Larry Lannon. The Department of Public Works is not a Fishers City department that you think about right away, but it has many big responsibilities. One that impacts all of us this time of year, snow and ice removal on the roads being one of them. I spoke with the director of the Fishers City Department of Public Works, Eric Pethtel, during the afternoon of Friday, January 25th. I'm at Fishers City Hall, and I have a little bit of a broken voice today because I'm fighting a cold, but somebody who has a nice, clear voice today is Eric Pethtel. Eric Pethtel is the director of public works for the city of Fishers. First time he's had a chance to talk to us on a podcast. So Eric, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
I'm going to start off with the Department of Public Works has a lot of responsibilities. You've got the upkeep of all the municipal assets. That's from concerts to some of the 5K runs. I mean, you've got 35 structures, as I understand it, from the website the city has. City Hall, where we're here right now, is one of them. But even the restrooms and the parks, fire stations, that's all your responsibility. So talk about your staff and talk about the everyday work that you do just keeping these buildings up.
Well, thanks for allowing me to share our story. I think it's a good story that needs to be told, and we like telling it when we get an opportunity. Under our umbrella of authority or responsibility, we have all of our street maintenance, our parks maintenance, facilities maintenance. That's on the operations side. On the wet side, it was referred to as would be the stormwater utility, the wastewater utility, the treatment plant, and all of the conveyance systems associated with that part of our operations. We have nearly 80 full-time employees, and on any given day, we'll have anywhere from 30 to 60 part-timers running around. That's in the low end of the season of the year. During the peak season, we'll have up to 100 part-timers running around who largely help us mow the right-of-ways and maintain all of the landscaping stuff that we take care of.
Well, speaking of part-timers, I know that this time of year, we're here in January. It's a pretty cold day as we record this today. Snow and ice removal on the roads, that's part of what you folks take care of. It's a big part of, well, I'm sure, what you do this time of year. Explain how your department prepares for the winter driving season.
Well, our snow fight, as we refer to it as, is something we're very proud of. It's something that's never too far from our lips. We're talking about it year-round. We can be working the bridge blast on the 4th of July and discussing our winter operations. That's actually occurred, and it does every year, actually. But we've got a pretty good plan in place where we take the entire community. We've divided it up into seven areas, and within each area, we've divided it up into area A, B, C, and D. So when we get into the neighborhoods and start pushing, last 2 weeks ago, we started in area section A. This past weekend, we started in Section B. The next push, we'll start in Section C. So we rotate everything around so everybody doesn't feel left out on when we get into their neighborhood, so it's equal to everybody. We have a quality control person for each half of the city split at Cumberland Road, both day shift and night shift. And each area has their own quality control or area leader, excuse me. So each area has their area leader plus their staff, usually about 5 to 7 pieces of equipment in each area. They have their lead person, and then they have the quality control in each half of the town for each day shift and night shift. And there's a fair amount of chatter on the radio when we're trying to make sure things don't get overlooked, and have you been there or have you not been there? Yes, I have, or no, I have not. But it works very well.
You know, that's one thing I was going to ask about, because when you have winter weather coming in, how do you determine that? Do you use the National Weather Service? Do you have private forecasters? How do you work trying to get ready for a storm or knowing when it's likely to hit?
We've tried a private forecaster a couple of winters ago, and it didn't seem like it gained us. There wasn't very much return on our investment other than above and beyond what we could get through the apps on our smartphones or just watching the local news. It would ultimately be the same forecast or equivalent, but we'd get it an hour or two earlier. So just didn't feel like it was a good use of our funds to go to do that. So we just use what you hear on the radio or news. So that's how we do it.
So it's a publicly available information from National Weather Service, the TV forecasters. You just put all that together.
Put it all together.
Try to figure out what to do next. So when you find out, okay, now there's a high probability a winter storm's going to hit Fishers, how do you swing into action? What happens at that point?
We will split into split shifts, 12 hours on and 12 hours off until the duration of the event is over, where we've cleared all of the roads. The national standard is to have all of your roads free and clear of snow within 72 hours after the last snowflake has fallen. And we're way above that. We're 24 to 36 hours afterwards. So I think our plan that we have in place and the way we've thought it out, we do very, very good. And I can't be any more prouder.
Well, yeah, and I have to say, you know, I've lived here since 1991, and going even that far back to the days of being a town, people, you know, I've lived in many places where people complain about snow removal all the time. I've rarely heard that here. In fact, people do compliment the city and the old town, even going back that far, about how well you've done. And do you think it's because you've planned hard for it and put a lot of resources into it, or what's your formula for success here?
I believe what I've previously mentioned, our plan that's in place, it's mm-hmm. proven. We massage it each year, but we don't change very much. It's like, if it's not broken, don't fix it. Could be a lot of people that move into Fishers have had just such bad service where they're coming from that anything looks better than where they've been. But, you know, in our city government academy, and we've talked about this, we've had people move from Florida to central Indiana to be with their grandkids. But in their research of where they want to land, some of them have actually picked Fishers due to what they've heard about our snow fight. So, huge compliment.
That is a huge compliment. As I said, I've lived plenty of places where there are complaints about it. But here, if anything, I hear compliments about how the city and the town has handled that. I do remember many years ago, this probably goes back to the 90s, we had a very strange situation. We had a heavy rainstorm, and then an immediate snowstorm went into a deep freeze. So we had this huge cake of ice underneath all the snow, and it was so difficult to get that out. And I do remember, I lived in Sunblessed. It took a day or two, but the city was out there trying to chop that ice up and try to make that navigable so people could get in and out of their homes. You just don't see that everywhere.
No, you don't, but we take pride in what we do, and you know, we partner with the schools and do all their snow removal. And it is our chief goal, obviously, to have everything safe and passable, but our goal is to make sure they don't call schools because of us.
And well, that's something that does not happen everywhere. I must tell you, this is a unique relationship. It's goes back many years and continues with Hamilton Southeastern Schools and the town and now the city. You've always provided services above and beyond to get everything cleared off, not just the winter, but even during the summer months, trying to help out. So to talk about that relationship with the schools.
Yeah, the memorandums of understanding that we have with the schools are a testimony to Mayor Faddis in identifying things that we do and do well as a need that the school has to accommodate into their operations. And it was kind of redundant. And we was wondering if we could flex that into our operations and allow them to save money on their part. And it's been a very good marriage the last 5 or 6 years working with them. The first couple of years was stressful because I think our first year was the winter of 14 or 13 into 14 when we had 50 inches, that bad winter.
Oh my gosh.
And we were still learning their properties, and it was like a courtship or a marriage with them and what they're learning, their expectations, and we were getting pounded day after day after day. We had over 34, 35 days straight of 12-hour shifts, and it was horrible. But they've not called a day off of school because of us.
No,
to date.
And they have, that you find that happens less often here than some other places in the area. Now, you talked about your plan when snow and ice hit. A lot of people have asked me, what are the priorities? You talked about sectors and so forth. Like, for instance, you want to clear off 116th Street you want to take my street and my neighborhood. So it's just in a general sense. Can you explain some of the priority streets that you want to get to right away when the storm finally passes through?
Yeah, our top priority are major thoroughfares, our 116th Street, the 126th, Allisonville Road, 96th Street, those big main arteries. Got to get them safe and passable. And depending on where we're at in the storm, if we have a lull in the storm, we'll dive into our secondary streets, which would be like the Sunbus Boulevards, the main backbones into these big subdivisions that go from one development into the next, into the other. And we'll get in there and poke holes, as we referenced, just poke holes into the subdivisions, and then we have to get back out into the mains and or the major thoroughfares and keep them going. And it's really a balancing act. It's like juggling, just in and out, and finally where you can dive in and just stay there until you can complete the development or the subdivision. And the last and low priority would be the cul-de-sacs.
I do remember several years ago I was at a meeting, and I can't remember if Scott Fadness was town manager or mayor at the time. Maybe he was mayor. But it was a group of homeowner association presidents, and he was trying to explain to them that I know some of you people do have private snow removal companies, but quite frankly, we are going to clear all the streets in the city, even the residential streets, because sometimes our crews actually are run right into your crews. So keep in mind that we're still going to try to clear every street, whether or not you have, in your particular neighborhood, another contract to remove the snow.
It's been a couple of years since we've had a decent series of pushes. We've had one couple this year, but it's been 4 years. And I can remember that last winter where we had a lot of snow, we were actually getting complaints from the private vendors who are missing out on billing opportunities because the city of Fishers made it into their subdivision that they were hired to do before they could get there, which is kind of unheard when you figure how many vehicles we have to push snow throughout the entire community, and we can beat them in there. And that was kind of a unique complaint.
That's true. I was just trying to think about this the other day, because the Fishers I moved into in 1991 as a town was a small town of 10,000-12,000 people. Now we have, we've expanded out as a city, and Geist area has been annexed, and some other things have happened, and now we've got over 90,000 people. We don't know the exact amount, but we will in the next census. My question to you is, how do you continue to keep up this level of service as the city expands, as new neighborhoods are being built?
Well, we couldn't do it without the support of Mayor Fadness and our elected council, because they try very hard to give us the resources we need to go do our work. And part of that is giving us the ability to, like paving. They've purchased us the paving equipment or road striping. We can stripe our own roads, and it's just given us the equipment to where we can control our destiny, as opposed to putting it out for bid and then hoping the unit prices are back and we can do it on budget or not. But they've supplied us with the capital and the equipment we need to do. We could always use more. I wouldn't lie about that, but I am not complaining. It's just largely due to their support allows us to get out and do what we really need to do to keep recapitalizing and keep reinvesting into our infrastructure and maintain it the best we can with what we have.
Now, you mentioned you have 12-hour shifts when you have a winter storm. So you have two sets of drivers. Is that the way it works?
Yes, we do.
So how? I know the county recently went out over the plea. They were desperate to get more drivers out there for snow removal. How are you doing in terms of staff?
We're doing pretty decent, all things considered. There's a pretty low unemployment rate in the local area right now, so it's hard to get people in. But back when the economy was rough in 2008 and 2009, we had PhDs and lawyers and controllers and everybody in here plowing snow for us. And now it is hard to get anybody to walk in through the door to do any job. We've got a lot of full-time positions that are posted, some of them for over a year. It's just hard, tough marketplace. So I'm happy Mayor Fadness has charged me to make sure when the snow is flying, every one of our vehicles are manned and out on the street. And that's hard to do.
And he lets you know that he goes out and does it himself.
Yes, he does.
Now, I did understand when Tom Dickey was with the city did have to pay for just a few mailboxes.
But yeah, that'll happen once in a while, though.
And that's an honest mistake to get up.
It is.
And if your mailbox is damaged, you have to let the city know. Yeah, but it doesn't happen very often, really.
Hopefully not, but it does happen. I'm not going to lie.
When the storm's all done, winter storm's over, you've cleared everything off, you've got your week or two to look back on, how do you assess how you did?
After each event, we perform like a little miniature SWAT with strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. And we get our key staff together, and we ask that question every event. We've done it twice now in the last 2 weeks. And we've learned from the first one, and we perform better on the second one. And but that first one, we hadn't plowed 7 inches of snow in 5 or 6 years, so we had a lot of rust to knock off. We had only 20% of the people plowing for us that weekend had plowed for us in the past. So there was a lot of new people. The ones who were here hadn't done it in 4 or 5 years. So that one, I've been saying all through the Christmas season that we needed a good toss-up with Mother Nature to get things back, remind everybody how important these winter operations are, because you start calling people in for a half inch of snow, and it's just repeatedly for 3 or 4 years, and they get complacent, and they get harder time people volunteering to come in. But we needed a good one, and I'm glad we got it.
Oh, so you're the one who wished for the 7 inches.
I did. I actually did. I'll admit it.
Well, last year we had some snowfalls, but it was just like what you. It might be a half inch here, an inch there. It never really. I mean, it accumulated over time, but there wasn't one event that had a really big snowfall.
And those little half-inchers, yeah, they're just as expensive as a 5 or 6 inch, yeah, snow, because they tend to glaze over and freeze with the wind, and use just as much, if not more, salt on those things than you would a 7 inch snow.
And there's another side to all this, because we have these variations in temperature, because we had these very cold temperatures, and we had 30, 40 degree temperatures. Then the temperature just this week took another nosedive down. And what happens sometimes is that even in the winter season, you start seeing chuck holes on the roads. I noticed Carmel, which does a pretty good job too. Somebody hit a chuck hole in Carmel the other day. Tell me the difficulty you have when you have these variations in temperatures, and you gear up in spring for the pothole problem. What happens when it starts happening too early for you to really put enough resource into it?
Well, I have people out hot mix patching holes today, right now.
Is that so?
Yes.
Okay.
So, you
know, can you get a hot mix this time of year?
No, you cannot, but we own a hot mix machine. It goes back to that question that okay. The council and the mayor has provided us the equipment we need to go do this kind of work.
Okay.
And so we have asphalt millings and raw asphalt on hand, and we plan for it. And when potholes arise like they do in this time of year, we're prepared for it. So my team, once they got out of the plowing snow mode from last weekend, washing the trucks and everything squared away for the next event, then they immediately shifted their train of thought to patching holes. And so we've been out every day this week patching holes with hot mix.
That's amazing. I did. Yeah, that knowing that you have that hot mix available during the winter months, people don't realize how important that is.
Because yeah.
Before that was the case, I know you had to wait on it.
And yeah.
Very limited in the ability to patch those up. Well, that's interesting news.
Yeah.
You mentioned this already, but your department has responsibility over the wastewater treatment plant. And I did a podcast several months ago with Rick Farnham and the mayor when
yep.
there was some proposals to up some of the fees. Talk about what you'll be doing with that operation now with some of the additional funds you'll have available.
It would be capital projects, expanding the size of the treatment, upgrading and maintaining some of our lift stations. Mainly that's it. And there's a whole laundry list of capital needs that's going to be used up by those additional user fees.
And I understand there's some parts of the city that's, how should I put it, chronically been plagued with some ponding when it rains a lot. I'm trying to think. There are two or three particular trouble spots. So my understanding is those will get the first a bit of attention with this.
Well, we're not called Mudsock for no reason. And there are some chronic areas in the old part of town that hopefully with this new redevelopment downtown is going to address some of that, a lot of it. It's on their forefront when we're talking about utilities and buildings and everything down there. That's being discussed right now. But all of our problematic areas are identified and prioritized, and they will get addressed just as soon as we can humanly get to it.
Yeah, it's funny. You talk to some of the historians who've looked at the history of Fishers, and they talk about those buildings on stilts because it was
yeah.
such a swampy area, and you get mud on your socks if you fell off the side of a of a building. So, yeah, the history of this city is a very swampy place.
You know, going back a little bit of history, sure. When we rebuilt 116th Street many years ago, when we took out the railroad crossing and took the ties out and they were rebuilding the ballast, there were 4x4 railroad ties that were stacked up crisscross and went about 8 to 10 feet down, and there was trash, and it was open cavity, open void underneath the road, directly underneath the railroad crossing. And I don't recall what trash was in there, but there were cans, and give you back the date and time of when that original crossing was installed. And you talk about stilts in the buildings. Well, they actually did that to the railroad crossing as well.
Really? Yeah. I bet there were cans of brands that are no longer available.
Probably.
Nobody kept it for old time's sake.
Old Sir Edward cigars, tins, and it was pretty good.
Well, I've only had a chance to sort of touch the surface of what you do. Anything you want to mention about the work you and your staff do before we start to wrap this up here in a moment?
Well, you know, I don't know. We just, a lot of folks don't realize how often they engage with Public Works. And I argue that before they run their water to brush their teeth, that water goes down the drain and it comes to our treatment plant. They've already engaged Public Works before they've even woken up. In a lot of cases, they back out onto the road and they hit the asphalt streets that we maintain, or the stop signs that we maintain in inventory. I'm proud of our work. I joke and tease our public safety professionals around here that when the public has a problem, they always call police and fire. But when police and fire need help, they call Public Works.
That's true.
So I like to get that out there so everybody can hear that. So I like rubbing their nose in that, I guess. It's all good fun.
Well, they depend on you. And
yes, they do.
And that's good to let people
and
know.
And we
that.
Them. It's a two-way street.
Absolutely. Yeah, both of you do. But I know that with the festivals, the old Freedom Festival, the new Spark Festival, you're very much right there providing all kinds of support.
Yeah, right in the middle of all of our events here at the Nickel Plate District and the amphitheater and the 5K runs. And we're everywhere all the time, every weekend.
I got to mention one other thing, because a couple of years ago, let it be known that I had gone down to Daytona to see the 24-hour sports car race. I've always enjoyed sports car racing. I'm not a big expert in it, but I've always wanted to see one.
Yeah.
So I drove down to Daytona and didn't stay awake the whole 24 hours, but I did watch the beginning and ending of the race, and it was a great experience. And that's when I found out you're a race fan. Tell me how racing got into your blood.
Oh, boy. My dad was a mechanic on what I would refer as an old late model, but back then they were just 57, 56 Chevys, and it's been in my blood ever since.
Where would they race?
Little quarter-mile dirt tracks in my hometown, Crawford County Speedway in Robinson, Illinois.
Okay.
And it's been in my blood ever since, and I've spent 5 or 6 years as a mechanic on a USAC midget team, and then spent 11 years as a USAC official, as a chief steward of one of their midget divisions, and I can't get it out of my blood. That's my crutch, I guess. That's what I like to do when I'm not around here.
I've had some family members do the old dirt track thing. They race to the Outlaw Series, yep. But you know, there's several of them, and you really have to love racing to do it, because you'll never make any money at it.
Yeah, they say that if you want to make a little bit of money in racing, you need to start out with a lot. So
that's right.
And it is so true. It doesn't matter what you're doing.
When it's all said and done, you spent more than you'll ever get back.
Always, always.
Eric Pethtel, you are the Director of Public Works for the City of Fishers. Eric, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
My thanks to Eric Pethtel for shedding some light on his department, particularly how his staff goes about clearing ice and snow from the city roads during all these winter months. This is the Larry N. Fishers podcast. My name is Larry Lannon. I write the LarryNFishers.com local news blog from Fishers, Indiana, a suburban community located northeast of Indianapolis. Thanks for listening. We'll talk again.